They just keep talking. The title, it's actually a quote from Warson Shire.
From where?
Warson Shire, from her poem, 34 Excuses for Why We Failed at Love. And I belong deeply to myself. I saw it as a tattoo, and it became kind of my mantra that I was saying during therapy. And then when I decided to name the book this, I Googled it, found her poem, and I thought it was really beautiful that her poem was about falling out of love, and my book is like very much about falling back in love with myself.
With yourself, yeah.
So I thought that was cool. But I always want to credit her when people compliment the title.
This is Dallas Taylor doing a reading from her new book, I Belong Deeply to Myself.
So this one closes the third heartbreak. I think if I were born a man, I'd be a preacher in a mega church. I speak with great conviction, and I have a flair for the dramatic. I'm persuasive, stubborn, and I hate to be wrong. I almost always truly believe my heart is in the right place, even when I'm being self-indulgent, greedy, or callous. So believe me when I say it pains me to admit, you were right. I was wearing my headset microphone and flying around the stage, creating a real spectacle of myself, begging you to worship at the altar of false gods, the one I had made out of two scared kids who'd stumbled into the same purgatory at the same time. I called you a non-believer and wrote you a sinner's prayer for leaving limbo before I could. I won't take all the blame, though. After all, it was you who cut the line while I was mid-backflip trying to rally the congregation. Turns out it does hurt to fall from heaven. The choir and the organ came together to mourn with me, and just as I began to fashion myself into the martyred fallen archangel, I was struck by the painful and yet righteous revelation that I had mercilessly used you to. Peace be with you. Because at the end of that relationship...
You're just going to go right into it.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Should That's I let so it marinate?
Good. I love marinating. Now, I don't do it when I cook because it takes too long, but on something that's bothering me, I'll let it marinate.
I at the end of that relationship, I realized I had been hiding from myself in a lot of different ways. And there was... I was like hiding out from myself in his apartment watching Sunday football. And it was comfortable. And it reminded me of... in a lot of different ways, my childhood.
They just keep talking and they don't stop talking.
Zolda Trachtenberg, you're a writer, singer, speaker, podcaster, cat lover, and creative actions coach. You just completed writing a new play, but you are working on mounting a production, which is so cool. And you believe being bold, creative, and kind are the secrets to a happy, fruitful, and successful life. Hi, Zolda.
Hey, Alan.
This was the first time that I had introduced somebody in front of themselves, so it sounds a little weird.
Welcome to my little studio.
Thank you. This is awesome. I love it.
One of the things I'm really excited that you've been working on is your play that you just finished writing.
Mm-hmm.
It was known to me as Overheard.
Mm-hmm. I'm a shameless eavesdropper and I have an excellent memory. So I note really interesting conversations that are going on around me and then I transcribe them verbatim. And
now you've changed the title?
Yes, I have.
How do you say it? How you would say it?
Listen.
So stay tuned for more information on Listen.
They never introduce the show.
What is my voice? Let's figure that out first. And like, who am I?
Exactly.
Why do I sound like this?
This is Dallas Taylor, a new friend of mine. She just published her new book, I Belong Deeply to Myself. She's an author, a writer, a creative. She's very cool. One of the coolest, I'd say. And this is our little conversation about I Belong Deeply to Myself. Really, it's a great book. I recommend it. I thought we should hear her right away. I couldn't wait.
When did you start writing this book?
So inadvertently, I started writing it when I started therapy. I was just kind of writing it in my notes. One of my really close friends and I were going through similar things at the same time, breakup-wise, and I was dealing with mine in therapy, but she didn't have the same access. And so she had asked me if I would be comfortable sharing what I was writing to see if it would help her. And after she read it, she was like, you need to do something with these. And I thought, I don't know.
It's a beautiful book to have on any shelf. I got the hardcover. I can't vouch for the soft. I'm sure it's also great.
You know, we go through breakups and there are some that hurt and there are other ones that like foundationally change the way that
you
look at the world.
Yeah.
And so that was my last one for me, was like way more about the way that I had abandoned myself during that relationship. Heartbreak is such a universal experience, but it's such a universal experience that feels so incredibly lonely.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So polarizing. You feel like everyone in the room can see it all over you when it happens and you feel really alone in it. And
well,
part of, I don't know about you, part of me wants them to see it, right? Like, don't you want people to acknowledge your pain in some way? Like, and I think that's what people are afraid of. They don't want to acknowledge other people's pain sometimes. Or part of me is like that way.
I think it depends on the breakup. I think it depends on the situation, because there have been certain ones where I was like, everybody pretend that this did not happen. Like, this did not happen.
The entire relationship or the breakup?
No, just I think like me grieving. I'm like, you know, like I'm like a caged animal. Like, don't look at me.
Oh, okay. You go into hibernation.
Yeah, a little bit. This one, not so much. The third heartbreak is the one I'm talking about. I just had been basing all my decisions off of someone else. And I realized that I was betting on someone else in a way that I hadn't bet on myself. I just went major life shift mode.
This is the move.
Yeah. Okay. So I went to Florida. I joined a Pilates studio where I became best friends with 3 70-year-old women who taught me Pilates and bar. Sherry, Randy, Eileen, shout out to you. It was such a healing summer. I wrote and then I did Pilates with my 70 plus retired friends.
Did you learn a lot from them?
Like, I did. You know, they're really, I think I vibe.
I'm trying to get my mom on the show. I don't know if
she's
old,
over 50 and I.
Yeah. That over is 50, my, that's, a,
yes,
that's where
I mean, that's my target demo.
Yeah,
we vibe out. Like, we just have a good time. People have told me since I was 5 that I was an old soul. And I don't know if that's true, but we just get along. Like, and I think that old people or older people, I don't think there's such thing as like being like past a certain age and then you're old. Like, but older people, people who have lived more life than me, are consistently some of my favorite people to talk to, as long as we all meet each other with respect. Because I think the main thing is like, nobody likes to be dismissed.
They just keep talking.
Some variation of IsoldaT.com, you will find me. I'm a natural director, so I'm already looking at, in my mind, I already see the staging, I already see the choreography, I already see the fight choreography, I see everything. Ooh. In, you know, it's laid out before me. Inserting myself into that would be weird, because that's not what I see. You know, yeah. I see something else. Have I cast different people in the roles in my head? Sure, Rachel Brosnahan is in it, absolutely. Not that I know her or can ask her to be in it, but you know, that's part of it is there are people, a slightly younger Helen Mirren would have probably been perfect to play Chorus. She's I think 80 this year.
I bet she could do it.
She could probably, I mean, she can do anything. She'd but crush. But you know, that I need, and this is something that I am very happy about. And that is that my main character is a woman in her 50s. Yeah. So many plays and shows are written about people in their late 20s or early 30s, or Spring Awakening, where they're all teenagers. I specifically wrote this show about a character who is a little world weary and who is in her early 50s. She's not a youngin. And there's a dearth of that. You know, like Kimberly Akimbo is a musical right now about a woman who looks 72, but who is only 16 years old in real life because of a illness she has or a disease she has, or condition, I'll call it that. So you see this 72-year-old body on stage, if you will, but playing a 16-year-old. And I'm going, you know what? I really want to see more people who have a certain amount of wisdom, who have a certain amount of, you know, a road miles on them, if you will, be the people who are at center stage and really be the people who are transforming, because you're never too old to transform. You're never too old to start again if that's what you want to do.
You don't necessarily need to be understood or liked by everyone, but you need to really like and understand who you are and then align yourself with people who push you further into that.
Rewind, poet.
And then align yourself with people who push you further into that and who make you, you know, want to be better, hopefully. I think, you know, not that I'm like constant, I don't believe in like the constant improving of self.
No, not constantly. We all need a little break here and there.
In the wellness and like therapy space, there's a lot of like, oh, well, you need to get rid of these parts of yourself, change these things and be more this way. And it's like, no, I am, you know, every part of me is deserving of love, even the dark parts. Or the, you know, less than savory parts. But the more I work to understand myself, I don't need to change. I need to just like expand into who I am from a place of love and genuine compassion for other people, it's not like I'm an asshole, so I'm going to be an even bigger asshole and just be an asshole as much as I can and expand into my assholeness. No.
Yeah.
It's like, I have the propensity to be an asshole. I also have the propensity to be an incredibly loving and caring person.
Right.
So I'm going to choose to push further into that. And occasionally I'm going to be an asshole because I'm a human being. But, you know, you.
I think once you acknowledge that you have an asshole self, you can then forgive other people's asshole selves, I think. Yeah. Like, a little bit, I see the asshole in you, the asshole in me, vows to the asshole in you, whatever the yogi is. Yeah,
it's holding people accountable, holding yourself accountable, but then also holding compassion for everybody in the scenario. Because, like, we're all, it's like everybody's first time alive, you know?
Provided you don't believe in reincarnation.
Have you found overhearing people for a long time that that's transformed your writing in any way or the way you think? Because, like, people speak in different styles, different, you know, tempos and everything, and different languages even.
Sure. Absolutely. And it's really, it's very interesting to see the cultural differences for me. Mm. I don't remember if it was Rich and my husband and I or just me on the train going in on Pride a few years ago, 2019. And there were a lot of people dressed for Pride on the train with us. And there was a Russian couple, and they were sitting, older couples sitting across from us, and they're talking in Russian. So luckily I speak Russian, so I was able to understand. And the man asked his wife, What is this? Why are they dressed like this? And she says to him, you know, people love each other. Yes. And she says, sometimes it's a man and a woman who love each other. Do you understand? Yes. Sometimes it's a woman and a woman who love each other. What? Okay. And then she goes, and sometimes it's a man and a man who love each other. And he went, I don't understand. And then she said, you can love who you love. Do you understand? And he said, yes. And she said, and that's what they're celebrating today. And I'm just like crying, writing this down, you know, because in the Soviet Union where these people were from, it homosexuality, the LGBTQ plus anything is just, it's illegal, it's frowned upon. So to have this man who has lived a healthy chunk of his life being fed that propaganda that it's wrong or it's bad,
right,
coming to that realization in that moment, I started weeping. I mean, I was born in the Soviet Union, so I grew up in that same, being fed that same propaganda, and having him probably in his 60s see that and understand it and go, I get it. It was transformative and life-changing for me, regardless of what it did for him, but I think it did something for him too. And it was just such an honor to be able to capture that moment in time and have that be something that I can point to and go, people can change, you know, people can change.
That's a beautiful, it's a nice framing of the whole, that's a nice way to explain it in very simplistic terms, and that you got to hear. That was really cool. Is that in the play?
No.
Oh man.
No, because I didn't know how to have, honestly, enough cast members come in dressed for Pride to have, and also to have enough cast members who are old enough to do this, right? So some of it, it's an interesting thing in writing a play. When I was talking to one of the producers who's interested in mounting the production, he's like, look, as an act, because he's an actor too, he's like, as an actor, I love that you have so many characters and so many actors. As a producer, I'm going, too many people.
Right. I think if you have more than 12 people in a cast, it starts to get really clicky.
And so as part of looking at wanting to license the show eventually and wanting it to be something that other people put on, not just me, I needed to kill some of those darlings, because I just didn't see a way to have all of that work. How do I represent 16 people and a crowded subway train all dressed for Pride in incredible, incredible costuming, and the little old Russian couple at the same time who's doing this while my main character is watching? So thinking of it from a staging perspective, from a production perspective, I couldn't figure out how to do it. But it's going to make its way into a book of mine someday. That scene will be in a book.
Yeah. Well, I might try to convince you to wedge it into your play, too. I have some ideas. You said a bunch of stuff.
I know. Sorry.
I really like that story. Oh, here's what I wanted to ask you was, just referring to this whole propaganda and stuff like that. Did that take you a while to like process, or does it still stuff that comes up from like something you learned when you were before you left, and you're like, oh, wait a second, that is something told to me by my government or something like that.
Oh, for sure. I come up against it all the time for myself. A lot of the messages I got when I was growing up were from my parents, from, you know, don't say anything, keep your head down, because there was a fear that at any moment you could be taken away. If you say something wrong, if you say something that the government doesn't want to hear, even at 5, 6 years old, I knew that. And so when we got here, the same messaging was, my parents still gave us that same messaging was, you know, don't stand out, don't make any waves, don't say anything against anybody, because if they turn you in. Now, they didn't understand that there's free speech here. They didn't understand that until later. So, you know, free speech as much as we have free speech. But but that was something that I had to work through. And as part of developing a public speaking phobia, not that you can tell I have had a public speaking phobia now.
Because you wrote a book about
I wrote a book about it. That's right. But overcoming that was some of the stuff I dealt with, that, yes, I have the right to speak. Now I should listen too, but I do have the right to speak. We all have the right to speak. We all have the right to speak and be heard, even if the people don't agree with us, whatever it is we're saying. We have the right to say it. And the problem was that I spent a lot of time when I was a kid being afraid, and the thing that brought me out of that was singing, was music. That's when I started. When I started singing in choir and then started doing musical theater in high school, it changed everything for me. That is what made life come alive. Was doing theater, especially musical theater.
Have a workshop that you do. You do a lot of coaching in different ways, but you have a workshop called Work in Harmony, mm-hmm. which I love the sound of that.
The Work in Harmony workshop. I teach people how to sing, and.
It's a singing course.
It is. Cool. And it is a little bit more than that. So I teach voice. I teach people how to use their voice when they're doing any kind of public speaking or communication. And I also teach singing. But one of the things that I did many years ago when I first started teaching groups was I realized that I was teaching a lot at community centers and things like that, people who would always wanted to sing but were too afraid.
Yeah.
That's what I love to teach most, is to teach someone who thinks they can't or to teach someone who's afraid to. And that out of that grew this workshop where I go into companies and organizations who need to team build, who need to really sort of focus in, but also need to up their innovation and creativity game. And so it's really cool. The NIH did this amazing study where they studied people singing together. They like put a bunch of, I forget what the word is right now. English sometimes escapes me. Not probes, but suction cups, you know, the things that are going to measure.
Monitors.
Yeah. Thank you. And they actually tested the heartbeats of people who were singing together, and they found that they started disparate, but they synchronized. As people sang together, their blood pressure lowered, their breathing slowed, and their heartbeats synchronized. A group that otherwise has nothing to do with one another, if they sing together, that's what happens. And so there are physical changes that take place in us when we sing that don't happen in any other situation. And collectively, those changes take place. So I started really exploring that and how we can use singing together to harmonize, not just in our voices, but in how we view the thing that we're trying to achieve, whatever project we're working on. And so that's what I talk about, and that's what we do together. It's a 2-hour workshop. I come in, and there are 80 people. None of them have sung before. And by the time I'm done, they have sung together in 3-part harmony.
Did you say 80 people?
Yeah, 80.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though. Sometimes the shyest, most recalcitrant person ends up being the biggest star that they didn't even know they could sing. So there are a lot of opportunities for growth and a lot of opportunities for celebration, especially of people who often don't get the celebration. Like I was doing a workshop And we had everybody in the company, and there was somebody who was the custodial staff. And he came in and he started singing, and everybody was just, they plots. They, what? He had this beautiful voice, stunning, gorgeous voice. And they're like, we had no idea you could sing. And he's like, I didn't either. You know, he's like, I just sing to the radio. And it was stunning. So there are so many different ways that we can access that part of us that allows us creative blossoming and blooming. And especially when you're trying to work together as a team, it opens the door to that kind of incredible sort of, I know what, let's do kind of thinking. And also you get to sing. And I got to tell you, so many people are afraid to sing. So, and all it takes is one sentence when you're young and somebody saying that, and yeah, it just, and changing that is a miracle to me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
My niece just got into theater.
Yay.
And she's like, I'm a theater kid. And it's like, oh, that's so, so cool. That's so cute. But there is something about that community that just helps you, like, get out over yourself a little bit or something like that. Like,
is that what you had when you were a kid and doing theater and stuff? Did you have that kind of, oh, I'm shy, and then theater helped you break out of it?
I don't know. I mean, I was always a clown. Like, I was a fool. So it was a good place for me to, like, fit in, I guess, and feel like what I was adding to the conversation was more welcome. But I definitely go through, like, I think clowning got me into this place of being able to own being big, being taking up space. Because I am sort of a person who likes to, like, disappear and, like, I'll listen over here and chime in when I need to. So, yeah, it was something like that. But it's interesting that that's part of your journey, too, to get to that spot. Because I was thinking, like, what gets us from the point of being afraid to use our voice to feeling like it's not only okay for us to use our voice, but, like, desired, wanted, needed. Like, we need to hear people's voices.
And I think that's how it ends, too.
Like, you have to find your audience. It's not necessarily going to be the people you grew up with or the people you know. It's, like, going to be the people who respond to your work. And that, yeah, you can only do that if you put it out there.
Yeah. And some people are not going to like what you do. And that's okay, because you're not for everyone. Like,
yeah, right, exactly, right.
Like, I don't need to be for everybody.
And you can still be, like, a mega pop star and a lot of, and not be for everybody.
Yeah.
I've seen people who are successful and I go, like, what are they doing? They're like, oh, they're really into what they're into. And yeah, they share that with the world. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I always was like, I don't need anything. I don't want anything. It's, like, such a weird spot to be in. And, like, you suddenly forget who you are.
I get a decent amount of messages, girls asking me, you know, how I got over certain things. And I'm like, another line from my book is, stop spending so much time worrying about who loves you, and start spending it on what you love to do, and the who will show up among the what. Start doing what you like to do.
Yeah.
And people will come into your life and fill the spaces that were once empty.
I think that's so true. Like, trying to build that stuff is, it's difficult. But you're right. Like, once you start focusing on the things you want to do, you start telling people who you are, and you start showing up to what you want to be. It's like, oh, it's amazing. I feel like I've gone on a similar journey with you, like, coming out of, like, this life-shifting situation. I wrote a play, I wrote a book, I wrote, like, that sort of journey is, like, it's the beginning of the process. Like, I think a lot of us creatives, and I speak for myself, like, wait, because, like, it's got to be the right time for me to do my thing. But, like,
yeah,
writing it is the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, writing the first words, like, finishing the concept, then you could, like, have to get it into where it needs to be seen by, yeah, other people.
And it's funny because I've been sitting with this project for so long before it came out that now I'm, like, over it. I'm like, I don't
want to. Oh my God, I'm so into it.
I don't want to, like, I'm happy to talk about it and do that kind of stuff, but I've already started thinking about my next project, and
yeah,
I want to be doing stuff with that vibe.
And sometimes you have to, I think, have to go through one project to figure out what the next one needs to be. And I did want to ask you something, though. You've written a number of shows, and the one I know best probably is The Helpfuls Now and Forever.
Yeah.
And that one, you you said, you know, we did a reading for it and for you of it, I should say, and which was super fun. But then you said you mentioned recently you asked members of your family to do a reading, which I think is super cool.
This is my niece Moth, who has agreed to let me use this clip of her agreeing to let me record her reading my play.
Moth will be reading.
Wait, is there an option where you'll record the others but not record me?
No, I have to record all or none.
Okay, then, yeah.
Moth, okay, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, like, can you record my voice but not my face?
It's just an audio recording.
Oh, then yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And one of them, or at least one, said, we need more of this one character. And I wanted to talk to you about that, actually. What was the process for you going, oh, yeah? Because for me, it is an, oh, there's almost a recognition that there's something that's been sort of in the back of my mind about this. Was that like that for you, or did you have to go through a more iterative process to make that happen?
That was definitely fortuitous. That was after the first reading. So we did the first reading with you and Megan and Sergio and I. And yeah, as I was writing it, there's a character called Gracio who is so low key, and like the energy is so like, it's an undercutting delivery. Like, it's just like, hey man, everything's cool. Like, this, how do I get more from this character when maybe that's their purpose, right? Maybe it's, but it's a, since it's like basically a four character play, everyone was like, we want more of that character, because everyone else seemed pretty fairly balanced.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, oh yeah, I did want more of him too, but I didn't know how to put it in. And then when I sat back and listened to it, and I wrote him a Gracio, I wrote him a grisliloquy. Which is the joke in the show that everyone sort of names their monologues after themselves.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? Like, when you were talking, the thing that popped into my head was, it's hard to be an active Buddha. You know, to me, Gracio. Really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because Gracio is a very sort of kind of a Zen-like character, and it is like, do you imagine the Buddha being like, I'm going to get up and I'm going to, you know, blah, 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 blah.
I got to go start peace right now. Right,
exactly. So, and to me, Gracio was that kind of character. So giving him a grisiloquy, I think, is such it's a beautiful homage to the character. And it turns things on their head a little bit, because you're not expecting a Zen character to be like, it's kind of like in my favorite, Waiting for Godot. You know, I've always wanted to do a play called Lucky Speaks, you know, because that moment where Lucky actually, you know, brrr, and then there's so much that's been repressed and suppressed and oppressed inside Lucky that when he finally gets to speak, it's this huge thing.
Yeah. I'm whole. I'm complete. I'm here. And you can look at me because I'm okay. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to be anything other than who I am anymore.
And the same thing here. All of a sudden we see Gracio have depth and presence. You know, and yeah. I think that that's really cool.
Being an active Buddha, I think that's a funny way to describe how I would do it. in this moment in the play, it sort of releases in this expression of like some of the pain that isn't always shown, right? This is a character that maybe does just like everything's fine until suddenly they're like, actually, I've gone through a lot. This has been my life's hard, and I got these struggles, and blah, blah, blah. And what if I try something and it fails? And like, well, you just try again. And like, what if I try something and it, you know, what if I still fail? And they're like, well, that's it. Like, you know, you're screwed.
To me, I think that's the point. Like with Listen, I wrote the show and then let it sit for a few days, and I just kept going. It was like I had a splinter in my butt. It's a Russian expression. When you have a splinter in your butt, you can't quite sit still because there's something the matter. And I kept going, there's more, there's more, there's more, there's more. And I didn't know what more there could be or should be.
Right.
Splinter in my butt. Splinter in my butt.
So in Listen, it's the same kind of thing. She is always part of the action, even when she's just listening to the action. She's just observing the action. And that's part of the metamorphosis of the play.
Listen.
Listen, exactly.
You know, there's a splinter in my butt.
That's how it ends, too.
That is exactly what happened.
There's so much good gems in this book, and it really is like a piece-by-piece journey of, like, I know there's this concern about the boyfriends. It's not about them. It's like you're processing different relationships in different ways, and like it really feels like an adding up of all these moments. And
yeah, it's just like me learning about myself and me getting way more comfortable in myself. I would say the girl who wrote this book and the girl who's reading it now, they're the same in a lot of ways, but one of us is way more comfortable. And
yeah, just, the one who wrote the book.
Yeah, well, no.
Who put it together.
The one who's here now. I'm just way more comfortable in myself, way more confident in myself. Like, not everyone is meant to understand you, you know? Sometimes even people who love you won't understand what you're making. They won't understand what you mean.
It's not for them. Or it's not for them yet.
Honestly, Swifties, Swift Talk was part of what made this happen. I started interacting with girls on TikTok, and then I started posting my writing on TikTok with Taylor Swift songs, and soon thousands of girls were messaging me, and they were like, this is exactly how I feel.
This has been great. Is there anything else you want to say?
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is so much fun. You give a lot of space for sort of introspection and people to, for me especially, I mean, we talk all the time, but in this arena on the show, I'm really grateful that I feel like wherever my thoughts take me is where I'm allowed to go and encouraged to go, and I'm really grateful for that. So thank you for having me on the show.
Oh my God, thank you for saying that.
So that makes sense. You're very on brand there. Yeah, I love that.
All right, how do you say it? How you would say it?
Listen. As every writer, as every creator knows, there's a point at which you look at what you've written, you go, this is a bunch of crap. And
absolutely.
I mean, it just is. And so, and I'm not at the place yet or anymore where I think it's crap, but I definitely know that it has there's a lot of work I need to do on it still.
Yeah.
And it's really like a love letter to all of the girls I've been since I was 17.
Dallas, you're super cool.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, I guess we're done here. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you find podcasts. Share with your friends.
They don't stop talking. They never introduce the show. They just keep talking.
You do you, boo.
Thank you.
The cover, amazing. The texture, nice.